Side Hustle Show 81, the path to 5K a month passive income, sharing what you already know.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
Hey everybody, Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show. This is episode 81, building a $5,000 a month passive income stream by sharing what you already know. I'm joined by Rob Cubbin, a longtime listener of the show, and actually one of my favorite bloggers at robcubbin.com. Definitely worth checking out his stuff if you haven't already, and because Rob has really been crushing it in the digital product space this year. Earning, like I said, up to $5,000 a month passively as of his last report, which he runs, he publishes them quarterly. And by digital products, I mean online courses and ebooks. Something that's you don't have to send a physical thing to somebody when they buy it. And when we spoke, he'd actually just up and moved, at least temporarily, from dreary England to sunny Chiang Mai, Thailand, living the digital nomad dream as we speak. Now, as is the custom on the show lately, I've compiled all my notes and highlights from the call, along with Rob's top tips, into a free downloadable PDF for you at sidehustlenation.com/81 or through the link in the episode description of your podcast player app. You can grab that. The beauty of this kind of business is you can create something once and sell it as many times as you can. It's like software, books and courses, that sort of thing. It's a beautiful thing. The downside is you can spend a lot of time creating something and never have it sell. So we're going to go over some of Rob's strategies to hedge your bets and set yourself up for traction and earnings right out of the gate. Because I've released a few digital products of my own this year, including a book and a couple courses. And at the time that we recorded this, really hadn't had much success at all on Udemy in the 6 months or something since I'd launched my first course, had earned $150, like nothing. Definitely not worth the time it took to create. But since then, my latest course on rocking your Kindle launch has done pretty well, and hopefully will continue to make sales, continue to be an asset going forward, and continue to be helpful for up-and-coming authors. News and updates before we get into the call. Still on vacation out in Lisbon right now, rainy Lisbon, I should say. It's a little bit wet this afternoon. But one cool thing, this afternoon I visited what claimed to be the world's oldest continually operating bookstore. They had the Guinness World Records certificate and everything to prove it. And I found a title that seemed to be relevant to side hustling as I was, killing time in the business section. Based on my rough translation of the Portuguese, it looked like that's what it was about. But I looked down and I saw that the author was Kimberly Palmer from Side Hustle Show episode 54, and the book was the Portuguese version of The Economy of You, which totally made my day. Anyways, I'm back in California next week and ready to get going on some new projects, some new ideas. So in the meantime, let's get Rob on the line. Hey Rob, welcome to the Side Hustle Show.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. This is going to be a good one. Rob, everybody, is a graphic design extraordinaire. He blogs at robcubbin.com, and now he's working on digital products like Kindle ebooks and online courses, sharing his wisdom of doing business online and generating 5K a month at last report. So, Rob, walk me through this journey from the cubicle and miserable to this 5K a month passive income. We'll get into this stuff. So what's, you're working corporate, and is there, what happens? There's a light bulb moment that goes off. What happens?
There probably are several light bulb moments, Nick. I'll try and keep it as short as possible, but I'm afraid I have to go back into the dim and distant past for me. But you were right in one sense that I was miserable, and I could go on and tell you how just exactly how miserable I was for a number of years. But I wasn't actually, technically speaking, in corporate either. I wasn't even good enough for corporate. I had temporary job. This is true. I was a temporary kind of image typesetter. So it's somebody who does the most menial jobs in graphic design, and that's where I was in 2006. I was just earning money in order to pay the rent, and I didn't see a way out of that. I had no plans to do anything differently, but along came the internet, sought me out. Amazingly, I managed to put together a website just about in 2005-2006, and luckily somebody told me to install a blogging system called WordPress. Okay. And I started blogging for lack of a better thing to do. And one day I suddenly realized I was getting traffic from Google. So I thought, hey, why don't I just keep blogging a bit more and try and get some work so I can do some work from home instead of in that cubicle on those freelance gigs that I used to do. I used to travel in on the underground train in London on miserable wet mornings, which really wasn't pleasant. But we'll carry on with the story instead of going talking about the miserable bit.
Okay. So 2006, 2007, you set up this blog.
Yeah.
What are you writing about?
I was just writing about graphic design and little Photoshop tricks at that time, actually. Okay. I was trying to pretend that I was a graphic designer, even though technically I wasn't really what you would call a graphic designer.
Fake it till you make it.
Exactly. I certainly failed. And it worked, because sooner or later I started getting people phoning me up. And I actually ranked for Freelance Graphic Designer London on the first page of Google for quite some considerable time around 2008, 2009.
Okay.
And for that reason, I immediately started picking up work from home. And the work was immediately more exciting. It was more interesting because it was graphic design. People thought I could do these wonderful things like logos and stuff. And sooner or later, I was getting bigger and better clients. And I was very happy because within 2 years of setting up the blog, which is unbelievable these days, but I think it still can be done these days, I was able to stop working, stop going to work for other people. In 2008, I worked my last freelance temporary role and have been working on my own business ever since.
Oh, my God.
So that was quite a long time ago.
Wow, congratulations. No, I've been full-time since 2008 myself, full-time self-employed since 2008 as well. So a similar story, although my blog never, the blog I had at the time was not generating that kind of, it wasn't generating clients. It wasn't generating business like that. So very, very cool. And would people, people might say, well, that was 8 years ago, or that was, 7 years ago. Is there still an opportunity on the blogging front? Is it just too crowded now?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that question, Nick, because you're absolutely right. People do say that, but I will always bang the drum of blogging. I would always say it's worthwhile, because I tried this out in 2013 and it still works. I set up a blog in 2013 and I started writing blog posts, and I wrote one guest blog post, and I did it in exactly the same way. In other words, I was writing blog posts about how much does a freelance graphic designer charge in London, and that would be the title.
Okay.
So you've got obvious keywords there, and I got Google traffic from Google Analytics, which only tells you about 10% of what's actually happening, and I got sort of client traffic, buying intent traffic, with people saying freelance graphic designer London in the Google search phase. And right. I got that last year on a new blog. So absolutely people can do it these days. They've just got to just keep blogging and experiment with the titles, get the keywords in there, and don't write anything too general, like what is design, you know, that'll go nowhere, but keep it specific, write about what you like and what you're passionate about, and I'm sure it will still work in these in 2014 2015.
Is there any traffic generating hacks that you employed, or is just, hey, I just wrote this stuff and magically the traffic started to appear?
Yeah, it's all just the basics, the keywords in the titles, you know, having nice long blog posts and working on relationships with people in my niche for the links and the usual social stuff. Nothing intelligent, no great SEO magic or dark art. I wish there was.
Well, I think, you know, I think you're glossing over the point that, you know, the stuff really is link worthy. Like, I've read your blog probably for the past year or so, and it's genuinely interesting and good quality material. Like, so I've sent several people there, just, you know, word of mouth, like, oh, check out Rob, you know, I don't want to, you know, reinvent the wheel. Like, I'll just send people to Rob's post on topic XYZ. And I think that's probably an important distinction, you know, rather than, I don't know, I kind of, Matt, a few episodes ago echoed the same thing, like, you know, build something worth sharing or worth linking to. You don't really have to worry about building a private blog network or doing other, you know, weird directory submission, article spinning, stuff like that.
I guess so, Nick. But God, that was a nice thing you just said about my articles. I think about 5 years ago, I don't think they were that good. I've written my fair share of stinkers in my time, and that certainly wouldn't have got linked to for anyone for any reason. But I think over the years, you do. Another great thing about blogging is it teaches you to write. You cannot fail to get to become a better writer if you keep on writing. And so I think I definitely have got better over the years with my blog posts. But sometimes I just can't think what to write. I think the one I've just published one, actually, just before I came out, it's really rubbish, you know. It's my favorite WordPress plugin. So beat that for originality. But
Essential WordPress plugins, and see what's this missing? What's this missing is a number. You know, everybody wants to share 71 essential WordPress plugins. And then you get
Nick. You're right. I've got to go back and change. I don't think I can number them.
I don't know. Like, does the world need another half-ass list post and stuff like this? I have a conflict over it, but I'm just as guilty as everybody else.
we'll try everything. Absolutely, yeah. But thanks for what you said, Nick.
You bet.
Cool. Thank you.
So you're writing about, like, hey, here's how to, you know, do task XYZ in Photoshop, and then at the bottom of the post you have a button like, hey, if you don't want to mess around with it, just hire me. Or how are you kind of funneling that traffic into being your clients?
I never even said that at the bottom of the post. I just had a contact button, which everyone else does at the top on the nav bar. Actually, to answer your question of SEO hacks, I had a number of good titles. One was creating, this is a bit technical, but creating interactive PDFs with InDesign. And it just so happened a really good client in London was looking for someone who could create interactive PDFs with InDesign. Okay. So that worked. Another one was how much does a freelance graphic designer charge in London? It's a great blog post to write, right? If you're any sort of freelance, and I wouldn't say you should call yourself a freelance, you should call yourself a business, but let's say you are a copywriter, and how much does a copywriter charge? And you can write an article about that. You don't have to give away how much you charge. You're talking about how much people charge in general in the market. Okay. And you'll get traffic from people who are looking to employ a freelance copywriter because they're going to want to know how much they charge. So that was one little article that paid dividends.
That's an interesting one. You think about the searcher's intent kind of these buying keywords and creating some content around that, and then funneling, you know, are you building an email list at this time, or are you just kind of just sitting very passively the contact form up in the nav bar?
It was all very passive and very sort of low tech in those days. I can't remember when I did start the email list, and the clients didn't tend to join the email list. The people who tended to join the email list were more my customers for later on when I created products to sell.
Okay.
So the actual sort of clients who were just interested in me doing a small task for them, or a big task for them, hopefully, I didn't set up the email list for them. Maybe I should have done, but it was in a case of people just contacting me through the website.
That's really good. And I think kind of by having the blog on your personal domain, like, it sets yourself up for this transition. You're not saying, this is London Graphic Design freelance.com. This is me, and as my interests and business change, I can change the content of the blog, change the layout to, does it still generate design business for you, or is it kind of primarily focused on the digital products now?
To a lesser extent, I tend to, if anyone, people do ask me to do jobs for them, but it doesn't tend to be a good client. So over the years, I've tended to stick with the good clients, and by that, I mean large, huge organizations with lots of money. To put it bluntly, that they're the ones that it's better to work for. The sort of freelance people, the solopreneurs, who asked me to do things for them, I never take it on, because it will only be a lot of hard work for very little money.
That's
who they're gonna, that's what they want. It's people still contact me for work, but it usually doesn't come to anything.
So are you still doing the graphic work for the big corporate clients?
I am. I've kept on some clients, and I still work for them to this day. Yeah,
because it sounds like you've got them on a retainer basis, or is it project basis? How does it work?
No, they just know where I am, and they've worked with me. They work with me.
Okay.
Anytime
they have a project, they'll come and say, yeah, "Rob, can you help us out with this?" Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because the business has transitioned into these other channels. So let's talk about Udemy first, because this, okay, or just, we can say online courses, and Udemy.com being, one of the main platforms for that. What was your strategy getting started on that course? Because I've just submitted my new course for approval, and I'm hoping to get some free coaching out of this, but like, I haven't, so I've got a couple up there now. I haven't had a ton of success on Udemy yet, and so I'm hoping to reverse that trend.
Right. Okay. So let's talk video courses then. And I've got to say that it's a long game. When I say long, a few months. It's nothing. Not a huge amount of time. Okay. It's something you've got to stick at. But if I take it back to the way I got into it, it's actually came through YouTube. Well, not through YouTube, but I had been on YouTube for a few years, because I had been writing tutorial type posts, and I suddenly thought, well, really, this will be better off in a video than me laboriously writing down what you do in Photoshop.
Okay. And doing screen caps and everything. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did start on YouTube for a while, and then I had a mate, a blogging buddy called Tara Roskill in the UK, and she blogs out of graphicdesignblog.co.uk, and she'd been on Udemy. I'd never heard of them before, but she had a course called Designing a Logo, a beginner's course, and she was doing really well on that. She told me how well she'd done, and Udemy was quite a new platform in those days. So I'm jumping ahead of myself. I'll go back and tell you how I got started, because my videos on YouTube, some of them were doing quite well. I had a few views. Others had sort of 50 views, after a year, you know. Okay. And
that sounds like my YouTube stuff.
Well, if you have stuff on YouTube, Nick, you could do a lot worse than if you could bundle it together with other stuff and create a course from it and put it on YouTube and put it on Udemy. Remember, if it's free on YouTube, you have to have it free on Udemy. But having a free course on Udemy is quite a good way to go as well. And it gets a little bit complicated with Udemy's, here we go again, commission structure and rules and the way they change them all the time. And we do have to be a little bit careful about what we say here because things are liable to change.
Yeah, we won't stress too much about their constant payout structures and stuff like that. But so you're compiling all these tutorial videos and say, hey, these have a common theme. I can create a course out of this.
Yeah, exactly. And I found I actually had three ready-made courses, which I could put there. They weren't great, but they were okay for free courses on Udemy. And because they were free, I got tons of signups. And anyone who puts a free course out on Udemy, more or less, will get pretty much loads of subscribers every day. And these are people watching your video, seeing your logo, listening to your voice, having exposure to your brand. And it's all good, and especially good in those days. I then created a premium course, and I was able to promote to the people on my free courses. And unfortunately, you can't do that now, but there's a way around it.
Let's hear it. Lay it on us.
Nowadays you can just convert your free courses to paid courses because you can only promote to people who are on your paid courses now.
You can't message the people who are on your...
Not anymore. Not with a promotional email. You're allowed to message them, but you
can't... What if your message is just like, join my new course? Not cool, not allowed?
That's kind of considered promotional, I guess. They have their rules. And
you gave them something for free. You ought to be able to send them something.
Well, I wasn't that free.
The rules are the rules. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Google, Facebook, Amazon, they've all got their rules, haven't they? So, but you can get around it. You just make a free course, wait for it to fill up with a few thousand people and make it paid. But the problem is once it's paid, you can't go back to free and fill up with more people. So you need to keep this course creation process fairly consistently. But that's just the same as any other thing I've done online. You've just got to be consistent with it.
Hmm. Okay. So you start out, so you make your premium course, but you set the price to free initially, and then you can message all of your other students in your other free courses to say, hey, come join my other free course. And then later, once you have your critical mass of students, that's when you up the price.
Yeah. I mean, you'd get people on your free course anyway, then you up the price and then you can sell to your premium courses. But you know, even that's not that important. I mean, even if you have a premium course only, and you can promote it to your list if you have a list, and you'll get sales. And Udemy's organic sales are great. I mean, I make more money from Udemy's sales than I do my own. And every month, that's just organic, just revenue coming in from Udemy's search engine and Udemy's advertising.
Are you doing anything to funnel the people from your free courses like into your brand, into your online empire in some way?
Oh, yeah, that's a very good point. I always say in at least one video at the beginning and one video at the end, if you want, you know, I just direct them to my squeeze page. Okay. And that gets loads of really good leads.
And that's totally kosher and that's allowed?
Yep, yeah. As long as you don't really make it ridiculously obvious that you're doing that on every video, then that's fine.
Okay. Just like have a little like scrolling, Fox News style update down at the bottom that says, you know, join the thing.
Okay. Yeah. Flashing red.
But the content has got to be, if you're going to charge for it, it's got to be exclusive to, to Udemy. It can't be
Udemy. Yeah, at least 70% of it. Yeah, I would put 20 or 30% on YouTube as a teaser.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so what kind of courses are you creating? You did something similar to this logo design course, or are they graphic design related? What are they all about?
Yeah, they're setting up WordPress and Photoshop, and also moving into the online promotion space, how to market yourself online, you know, how to have a successful blog, email marketing. So yeah, they're about lots of different things, but design as well, WordPress. Yeah.
And people buy this stuff. It seems like there's so much like free, like how to set up WordPress. There's got to be a million like YouTube videos on how to set up WordPress, but people buy it.
Yeah. Yeah, they buy it, Nick. There is a huge market out there. I agree with you. It's all there. For
not
free.
Not to discount your work at all. I'm sorry.
No. I had the same doubts myself. But the beauty of this, the beauty of Udemy for me has been, it's given me the confidence to believe that there is a market out there for online career skills, or call it what you may, sort of online learning about this sort of thing. People are hungry for video content of this type, and they will pay for it. I mean, the results speak for themselves.
Okay. Interesting stuff for sure. What kind of prices are these courses at?
Well, this is the funny thing, but you tend to price a 2 or 3 hour course at $80 to $90. I know that sounds a lot. Pricing's completely up to you, and you can do what you want. But the thing is, as everyone knows, Udemy really makes a bulk of their sales, probably 97% of their sales are on discounts. So at the moment, they're running a Halloween discount. Every month, there'll be some sort of new scheme where you can get a course for $10, $15, $20. So people end up spending that $10 to $20 on a course, but the course is usually on at $80 to $90.
Have you found it's something of a portfolio business where, you know, just having one course or two courses isn't going to necessarily do that much for you, but all of a sudden there's a tipping point or something where the cumulative effect of having, five, six, 10 different ones really starts to change things?
Yes. In a word, you know, you've got it spot on, Nick. I mean, it's just not a tipping point, but things really have started happening. And I'm sure they wouldn't happen for me if I had just one or two courses there and sat back on it. You're just going to say, you know, it's 80-20. One of the courses is going to be a hit.
Yeah.
And you don't know which one it is. Exactly the same with Kindle, you know?
Yeah. Have you done anything specific to get reviews, or when you launch a new course, what's your promotional tactic to get the word out on it?
Yeah, I've done really little on it, Nick. really little. I mean, just obviously at the start, I promoted it to my list, and that's a big deal because I'll always get sales for you. Anyone will get sales from their list.
You say like, hey, this is a limited time discount, or just hey, I introduced this new course. I think you'll like it.
Trying to think, I can't remember, but I should think I did the limited time discount. Yeah, I mean, that's always the way it goes. And at the same time, you can or another email, you can ask for reviews and you'll get them from your list. But now I don't even do that because I want I'm going to stop promoting to my list the Udemy courses and just try and do as little as possible, really just create the courses and then I'll just be promoting to my Udemy people.
So 2 to 3 hours of video for the course, you know, is primarily just screen capture, kind of voiceover stuff?
That's what I do, but you can also do slides. You know, I also did my most popular course is slides.
Oh, okay. Like PowerPoint voice. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's been my challenge. Like, I have no problem with the screen capture stuff, with the PowerPoint stuff, but when I've got to do the talking head style, to get the camera set up and do the video, and then they're like, "You're you know, because they're really picky about quality in a lot of cases, to make sure your course gets approved. And I don't know, they're like, your video says it's HD, but it doesn't look very HD. Like, what are you, like, I don't know, I just turned on the camera. So but that's good. So they'll take a course that like does not have your you don't have to show your face like talking on it.
Yeah, and I think it's nice to put your face in there, but I wouldn't do it more for my with my face. I wouldn't do it more than 5% of the whole course.
Okay, why not sell this stuff directly now that you're the guy with the with the big blog platform, the email list, and all this stuff? Like, why not? Because you say, hey, Udemy takes half, or I don't know how much, they take a varying percentage of the course fees. So why not just sell the stuff through your own site?
Absolutely. And that's exactly what I'm doing at the moment. I've set up a membership site, but boy, it's a lot of work and it's not as easy. But you're absolutely right. It's something I've got to do. And I am doing.
Okay. I chat like, should I sell this direct? Should I just go through Udemy? I'll take another crack at Udemy just because they make it so like just drag and drop. I'm going to drag this video over here, this video over here, like really, really easy to do. And they do a nice job on the sales page and all this stuff for you. So there's, there's some value built in there for sure.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But I mean, it's got the beauty of this. The whole thing is you don't have to be exclusive anywhere. So the answer is just do it, put it everywhere.
Okay, that was the next question. What other platforms do you syndicate to?
Okay, so I've had success with Skillfeed, which is created by the guys at Shutterstock, and you get paid by the minute viewed there. And it's sort of, it's not great, but it's totally passive. You just put the courses up there. You don't even get student feedback.
Oh wow. So somebody's watching your video, you're getting residual income, passive income.
Absolutely.
If you created the course, you might as well put it up. Is it like an approval process? How does it work?
Yeah, this is exactly this. But if it gets approved on Udemy, it's likely to be approved on the others as well.
Oh, all right. I gotta put my thing on Skillfeed. Okay.
Put your thing on Skillfeed. Skillfeed and Skillshare. I'm just starting now and it's looking good, but I haven't got enough information about that yet to give you.
Okay. What about, so what's next? Could you just kind of keep pumping these things out? Or are you worried about running out of topics, or what's, you're kind of like, are you repurposing the course material into book form and putting on Kindle? Is that part of the plan?
Yeah, it all is. I mean, they're all repurposable, and I'm glad you mentioned Kindle there, because a lot of it is cross-promotional. I mean, I can write a Kindle, and it sort of distills my thoughts about a subject, and then I can bring it over to a Udemy course and shoot some screencasts and make it into a course, and you can sell... You can sell the Udemy courses on the Kindles very easily. And I'm not worried about running out of material at the moment, because everyone's asking me to do a course on creating courses.
Right. That's, that's the thing. Everybody sees the $5,000 a month in.
Yeah. Exactly.
Online income. And they're like, how did you get there? How do we back into this? Starting out with the free courses and then kind of just leveling up from there.
Yeah. I mean, that's my next project is to do one like that. And, people are asking me to do Kindle ones, and I'm not, as you know, Nick. I mean, I think this time last year I just started on my Kindle journey, so I'm not the big expert on Kindle. But people are asking me to create courses on that as well, so I'll be looking into that one as well. Cool. But you're the Kindle expert, of course.
That's the topic of my latest Udemy adventure. So. Check it out. Go buy it on Udemy. That's the thing. Trying to leverage what you know, what you've had some success with, and transitioning that into helping other people learn you know, learn kind of the step-by-step stuff, like the real, like the juicy tactical stuff. And that was what was fun of putting this course together, to go into like really nitty-gritty details, you know, screen sharing, like, oh, here's the exact process that you can follow, because there is like a proven kind of systematic approach to do this. And probably 2/3 of it comes before you ever, you know, launch the book. Like there's so much kind of like laying the foundation that comes into it.
Yeah, well, I know exactly. I mean, I read your blog post about it and heard your solo podcast about it, and that didn't even include everything you did. So I think people do appreciate the nitty-gritty technical details, because people like to gloss over that, and it's hard. It's hard to put that all down in writing, and it's hard to create a video course about it. So when you do it well, I think it can be extremely useful to people, and they really appreciate it. I mean, you know, the reviews I've got and the emails I get are quite amazing. And so I certainly wish you the best of luck with that. You certainly deserve, it certainly deserves to be successful, because I'm sure there's a lot of Kindle stuff out there that's absolute rubbish, as I'm sure you know.
Well, it is, and it changes, you know, from time to time as well. So there's different tactics that kind of come into vogue or get discovered, and then, you know, maybe they get played out. So who knows? But I wanted to ask if you, because this the kind of the YouTube to Udemy strategy is like is really, really fascinating to me. It's like, look, these videos weren't doing anything for me on YouTube, 50 yeah. views, but all of a sudden now it's positioned as a free course. Like they're bundled together, and yeah. it's like all of a sudden the value, you know, the perceived value is so much higher.
Yeah,
and you can funnel these people kind of into your empire, into your list, and then eventually sell them something down the road, or eventually push them into paid courses. Is there any like SEO for Udemy, or like USO, you know, a Udemy optimization? Like how do you make sure your course kind of shows up in their results?
Yeah, we see that. I mean, that's true what you said about YouTube. It's very, very, very good point. As for SEO, I'm afraid I have done very little on Udemy SEO. I mean, it is there. I've just done the basics, you know, put the keywords in the title, try and make the title as clickable as possible. I mean, look at the successful guy on Udemy at the moment, Alan Hill, who's absolutely crushing it. He's on $4,000 a week.
Oh my gosh.
And his title was how to earn $2,000 a month on YouTube with no filming, and that's because he has a successful YouTube channel that earns him $2,000 a month in just in advertising revenue, which okay. means he gets crazy video views.
Yeah, no kidding. You have a ton of traffic to get any kind of rev share from YouTube.
Exactly, but you can see what that title is telling people is that, you know, it's easy to make, to, you know, is there's some sort of ease of it, but also more importantly, it's
a concrete result.
Yeah, exactly, and it proven. He'll show his YouTube stats and the, you know, I you know, whether you want to make out as though it's easy or not, I mean, obviously I'll leave that up to you. Yeah, a lot of your listeners will probably like to sort of be more frank with people, you know, so you're going to have to work hard to make this sort of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, you get the ideas, a proven ability to get a result, whether it's money or a skill, is very good in the title. That's not really SEO. It's more sort of a combination between SEO and clickability as well for the title.
A little bit of salesmanship involved. I got to reach out to this Alan guy, because I did have a request for a YouTube side hustle show. So we'll have to see if we can, you know, share some of his secrets on a later show.
Yeah, he'd be a good one to talk to, definitely.
Any kind of parting thoughts, like, you know, somebody wanted to do this as a side hustle in an hour a day, you know, how are they, you know, what would be the best way to get started? If you had to start over today, like no platform, no nothing, what, you know, what path do you follow?
Yeah, I like that question because I love your show, Nick. I've got to tell you, it's a great show. I've listened to a great majority of the episodes. And I love the side hustle bit because I was side hustling and I'm still side hustling because I was, you know, I was working and I had a side hustle setting up the graphic design business. And then I had a graphic design business and I had a side hustle of the information products. Mm-hmm. And I'm always going to be side hustling. And I love that because it is an hour a day. You can get up and write 500 words, 800 words, whatever you like, every morning or every evening. And at the end of a few weeks, a month, you've got a Kindle book. It's the same with video courses. When I do a video course, I like to create one video a day. So, you know, a 5-minute video, actually, it only takes me 5 minutes to make. The editing, probably maybe another hour.
Yeah, exactly. It's way more time consuming than I'd thought it would be.
Yeah, but considering the minimum time for a Udemy course is half an hour. So that's 5 hours editing and maybe half an hour shooting. It's not a lot if you don't set up that camera to, you know, right. If you just use ScreenFlow. So this 1 hour a day thing is totally achievable. I would do 1 hour a day creating some sort of product, either a book or a video course. And I'd about 1 hour a week as well and do a blog post every week. Have a list and that starts your machine. You know, you have a conversation with your audience. Your audience grows as you create more blog posts and content. You get feedback from the audience about the blog posts and products that you should create. And so the virtuous circles keeps rolling. You get better feedback, bigger audience, better feedback, better products and bigger audience. It just grows on itself. So I think that idea of a little bit every day growing your business is a really, really powerful one.
No, I do too. Kind of that, you know, incremental, take the steps or make, you know, one foot in front of the other every day. I love it. Rob, everyone check him out. RobCubbin.com. We'll link to that in the show notes. We'll also link to all his Udemy stuff, of course, so you can check out and see what he's doing on that platform as well. And Rob, we'll wrap it up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Number one tip for Side Hustle Nation would have to be consistency. Keep your blog posts coming, keep the products coming. Don't spend too long on your one perfect classic product that's taking you months and months and months, and lock yourself away. Get out there and ask your audience what they think of your idea, and push it out. Just push it out. Just don't fail quickly and keep going. And don't worry about putting out stuff that's not perfect, because it'll never be perfect. Just consistently put it out.
I love it. Thanks so much, Rob. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Nick. I enjoyed it. Cheers.
Cheers.
This edition of the Side Hustle Show is brought to you by Airbnb. And I'm recording this little pitch from an awesome Airbnb apartment right here in Lisbon, so I can speak firsthand how much this is so much better than a hotel. We've got more space, more amenities, a full kitchen, a better rate than a hotel, and what I would like to consider a more authentic local experience. Side Hustle Show listeners can get $25 off your first booking when you create an account through sidehustlenation.com/Airbnb. This travel credit is valid for up to 3 years after you claim it, so jump on it now and use it on your next trip whenever and wherever that might be. Again, it's sidehustlenation.com/Airbnb for $25 off your first booking. Now, as is per the usual, I've compiled all my notes and highlights along with Rob's top tips for you in a free downloadable PDF at sidehustlenation.com/81 or through the link in the episode description of your podcast player app. And one thing that stood out to me in Rob's number one tip calling for consistency is that many of these side hustles really are portfolio businesses. And what I mean by that is your first product may not be a hit. Your second product may not be a hit. Your third product may not be a hit. But the cumulative effect and the cumulative experience of putting great stuff out into the universe, eventually it gets noticed. Like I got an email from Steve Scott the other day. He went into detail about his Kindle earnings and how the 80-20 rule still very much applied across his massive portfolio of Kindle titles. And that's the thing, like the bulk of your income may come from one or two products or projects, but you never know what that product is going to be until you consistently build out that portfolio. Anyways, I thought it was a good tip, so I'll wrap it up there. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving if I don't see you, and I will catch up with you next week in episode 82. Hustle on.
Thanks for listening to The Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.